Sewer Commission meeting for February the 20th order. The first item on our agenda is employee recognition.
I've got two employee recognitions. We've got two construction inspection technicians that have passed their water distribution class 4, which is a really difficult exam. One is Josh Leva right here, and the other one is Jason Oxford, who's still out in the field. So we want to congratulate those guys.
Good job.
Ron, any other employee recognitions?
Oh, John. We had 6 guys pass their collection 3. Brandon Beeson, Jeff Harrison, Tristan James, Alex Laprell, Danny Lester, and Efren Perez. They all passed their collection 3. And that best part about that, they all get a raise. And they're all happy about
Yay.
That.
So,
Any other employee recognitions? If not, we'll move to the next item. We have minutes from our January the 16th meeting. I would take a look at those. Can we entertain a motion?
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes from January 16th, 2024.
A motion?
Second.
Motion and second. So any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay? Minutes pass. The next items on our agenda, we'll start with the reports. The first, our financial reports. Jared.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Mm. You're still here, thank you.
I'm here. Well, this is our report for the end of January 2024. And I indicated at our last meeting we'd experiment a little bit. So this is part one of our experimentation in terms of how and what exactly we report to this commission each month. Always like to touch on billed revenue and consumption. You can see our billed revenue for January on the water side was $1.1 million and $1.4 million for sewer. That's a year-over-year percent change compared to the prior year, the same period, of 3% and 3.9% water and sewer, respectively. A little bit less on the consumption side, but that's just explained by a bump in rates year-over-year. And budget versus actuals, you guys had asked for some of that information to be presented, and we'll give you a little bit of that here. This is just kind of a very high-level summary view of our budget to actuals. Included in your packet are a couple of reports from our financial system that you can look at for more detail. But just to kind of cover it at a high level here and show you that we're looking at it, you can see that here. Just to read this, you've got water on the top and sewer on the bottom. Two charts, revenues on the left and expenses on the right. So those groups of columns there are for 2022 and 23 and 24, reading left to right. And you can see that the blue columns representing year-to-date revenues on that top left. We're at $12.1 million for actual revenues. And so you can see just from this visual that actual revenues are increasing each year along with the budgeted revenues. And it's a similar story for expenses on the water side. I've given you just a little bit of a benchmark here. Through the end of January, we're 58.3% of the way through the fiscal year. And so year-to-date, then, water revenues are at 64% of our budgeted amount, and revenues at 50, 54, 55%. So revenues tracking higher than maybe we would have expected for this point in the fiscal year, expenses tracking a little bit lower. And it's a similar story down here for sewer. Revenues And this is skewed. It's a 79%, but as we always footnote in each of these presentations, we did get one-time grant revenues this year. It's almost $2.5 million. So that's skewing our revenues on the sewer side. Without that, you can see that we'd still be at 65% of our budgeted revenues on the sewer side and 52% of our budget on the expenses side. So revenues tracking a little bit higher than budget, expenses tracking a little bit lower. I've also given you some information here on just our year-to-date surplus or deficit. I've called it surplus. It's maybe misleading. It's really not a cash surplus. It's an accounting figure. It's year-to-date income, right? And so we had budgeted up here for water year-to-date income or a total income of $3.7 million. And through January, we're now at $3.8, pushing $3.9 million net income. And on the sewer side, we had budgeted income of $3.3 million. And again, with the help of that $2.5 million grant, we're at almost $6.7 million year-to-date income on the sewer side. And then this chart gives you similar information. It's kind of the monthly activity. So for FY24, then you're looking at the year-to-date or the monthly net income each month adds up to $3.8 million. And then you've got a column here to show you the variance to the prior fiscal year. So we're up through January over last year by $245,000 on the water side and up almost $700,000 on the sewer side. Going back up to our memo up here, I didn't include here total restricted and unrestricted funds, but those are $48.97 million, about $3.8 million more than January of 2023. And then for other financial reporting items, January 31st was kind of a big deadline for tax filing for the IRS, and between new reporting requirements from them on the IRS side and a transition period here among staff at RWU, it made it a particularly challenging season for us. But one way or another, we got both the 1099s and the W-2s out on time, and we'll see how the IRS likes it. And then a few other items here, and this is not big stuff. It's mostly just housekeeping, but wanted to let you know what we've been spending some time on, truing up things in accrued interest, making sure that the balances of our certificates of deposit match our bank statements. We found a $26,000 overstatement for water and a small understatement for sewer that were fixed with a January 1 correcting entry. I mentioned last month that we were going to revise our method for accruing interest. The first couple of months of each quarter, since we get quarterly statements for those investments, we have implemented that, and I do think it will be a smoother recognition of that income going forward. Matt in our office has been able to spend some time truing up prepaid expenses, and we also made a correction on payroll. We normally have to accrue each month a portion of the payroll that applies to the prior month. We did that for June, the first payroll in July, but never reversed it in July. So we had overstated our salary expenses for the year. Instead of reversing it in July, we reversed it in January. So that kind of artificially lowered our January expenses a little bit more than they should have been. But just some notes here to let you know the sort of things we've been working on, and we'll let you know that I'm sure there will continue to be more things that need to be cleaned up as we go along, but we'll do our best to find those and do that.
Thank you. That's good. Questions, comments, financial reports? Chair, thank you. I appreciate you putting in that budget, the comparison to budget. You've got the month-to-month, but it's also, or year-over-year, but it's also good to have that comparison to budget. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Very good.
Okay. The next item on our agenda, we have engineer reports. Brian.
Good
Development Plan Review. So this month, we reviewed, didn't add all these up, but it's close to 100 plan reviews. We had five fire sprinkler systems, 35 commercial plan reviews, two land disturbance permits, 51 large scale developments, and 8 minor subdivisions. And there's kind of a over on the right is kind of a shows where all those projects are located. I'm still trying to get used to the reporting on the City Works projects, because before I would report that we had about 40 to 45 plan reviews a month, and that's doubling, and there's various reasons for that, and a lot of these are no comment reviews, so we don't actually might be another department has comments, but we've already reviewed it. And so some of that's a little bit misleading, but I would say overall we've seen just that steady development trend that we've seen over the last few years. So haven't really seen anything slowing down very much. We continue to see a lot of these townhome, multifamily type developments, as well as quite a few commercial large scales. Does anybody have any questions about any development projects? I will try to go back and for the next commission meeting, put this in the form of a printout to put in the packet so you guys can look at this. For the project status, pre-design the capacity improvement project. We're working with Freeze and Nichols to identify the technologies that we want to implement out at the plant for the capacity improvement project. We actually had a call today with the city of College Station, Texas, which has just completed a project that's using some filtration and screening equipment that we're looking at for this project. So just kind of in that study phase, gathering information, seeing what works and what hasn't worked for cities that have similar sized plants as ours. So we've been doing a lot of research on those various types of equipment for screening and headworks, pump station, filtration, and disinfection. Some status changes. West Poplar Street was kind of on hold for a little while. There's been some activity on that. That's looking to probably go out to bid around May or June. So that's going to be between 8th and 1st Street. They're taking those four lanes and narrowing that down to two and making more room for pedestrian access and dealing with the stormwater through bioswales and things like that. We're also going to take the opportunity to replace some of those old cast iron pipes into the street and things like that. So we've got the plans all done. We're coordinating with SWEPCO right now. They've got to move their poles back out of the way. So there's been a lot of activity on Poplar Street the last couple of weeks. I had a project in here we're calling 2024 Miscellaneous Waterline Replacements. And these are those little projects that kind of crop up over the year that, hey, we've identified several smaller water lines out in the Montanay area that really need some attention. They've been eroded. A couple of them were exposed. Field operations had to go cover them up during that cold snap. And they're really in need of replacement. And so we're starting on that design process. Another one is Hudson Road pedestrian improvements. This is a sidewalk along the north side of Hudson Road. We'll have some meter relocations, hydrant relocations. This one is this last Sunday that was advertised for bid. It's pretty minor on the utility work though, but I did want to make you aware of it. The big one that is out to bid right now that we're opening bids on February 28th is the Walnut Street widening. from 8th Street to Dixieland. And so that's going to be a big long-term project for us, water and sewer replacement along that entire corridor. The other one that'll go out to bid is currently out to bid is South 28th Place. This is on the north side of Pleasant Grove Road, just to the west of I-49. And there'll also be a roundabout constructed there in front of the Casey's gas station there. So this is fairly minor utility work, but we do have a couple water and sewer lines to relocate in there. And then we've got several under construction, probably most notably, I'll talk about Pinnacle Sewer here in a minute. The 13th Street roundabout, 13th and Poplar, is really heavy into the utility relocations on that one. They're trying to get that one done before we get cranked up on Walnut Street, so we have an alternate route through there. Are there any questions about any of these?
Hey, Brian, remind me, on Walnut Street, is that 100% reimbursement to the city? Well, so for RDOT, or
RDOT has an agreement, and I think the city is capped at, don't quote me, but I think it's around $5 million is their contribution. But they have a cap. We do not have the same cap. Our agreement with RDOT follows their utility accommodation policy, and that's that if we're currently in their right of way and we have to move, it's at our expense. If it's in our own easement and they're pushing us out of that easement, then RDOT will reimburse. Unfortunately, on this project, we're mostly in the right-of-way. So I think it's something like 80-90%.
I think we're getting reimbursed for about 18%, if I remember correctly.
What is there an estimate on our part of that yet, what that equates to?
The last one we saw was it $5 million?
Our part of it, that sounds about right for the estimate.
I believe it was $2 million and some change for each water and sewer. I don't have those numbers with me, but it is a significant project. I'm happy to report that the pipe bursting crews have made some significant progress this month. This is the open trenching section from the plant up to about the area of this pond here, and the crews have been pipe bursting, and this section in here is what they've gotten laid this month. I do want to point out that's simply bursting the pipe. We're still going back through and setting all the manholes, doing testing. So there's a lot of work throughout the project site. The country club and the community has given us a lot of grace out there. We've really made a mess, and they've but we're looking at to get everything done and getting that cleaned up and being off the golf course by March 31st. Beyond that, we'll just be working along the backs of these homes, kind of along the skirting of the course. To do that, we're accessing off of Champions Drive and temporarily taking down a section of the wall, the concrete wall, around the country club to get in there. So there will still be some disturbance after March, but they're on track to hit that March 31st milestone to be out of the fairways and have everything cleaned up. Fingers crossed. We did hit a little snag here along Country Club Drive as we were pipe bursting that. We exposed that pipe and it was ductile iron. And we're gonna have to back up and bore that section of pipe instead of pipe bursting. You can't burst through ductile iron with what we're trying to do. So we're looking at a solution for that right now.
I listened to Brett earlier today, closed the front entrance to this the roundabout. So the attention probably has maybe gone from RWU and if it goes back to the city, because right now it's a bit of a challenge. If you're out in that area, pretty much anywhere in the uptown area right now, it is a challenge to get around because there's the roundabouts. There's, and again, today they are, I guess Monday they closed the front gate. So the traffic patterns are a bit of a challenge. So maybe they're taking the pressure off of you finishing up inside the golf course because now you're just trying to get in. So that's good.
Just a little update on the dryer. We've got design team has 50% plans submitted. We've been jointly reviewing those set of plans with Crossland Heavy and Hawkins Weir, Black and Beach, and then just kind of coordinating on those items, identifying those contingency items. So Crossland Heavy is working towards getting us their guaranteed maximum price so we can get that contract amendment back to commission next month and hopefully get approval by March 31st, which is the deadline set in the in our grant to be under construction. I do want to point out that when we get our guaranteed maximum price, that's going to be the contractor's estimate based on their quotes from their suppliers and vendors. And there will actually be a bid process beyond that to where we actually select those subcontractors to actually do the work. But we will get that guaranteed maximum price amendment probably first week of March. So we'll have a couple of weeks to review it and validate it before we present it to the commission.
Brian, what March 31st, do you just have to stick the ceremonial shovel in the ground and say we've started, or how does that work?
We're going to issue a notice to proceed, and so that's going to be our documentation along with the contract amendment. We will issue that, and we'll probably turn right around and put them on hold until we get our plans 100% complete. But I think there are some items we can probably get the contractor working on. As far as exploratory type of things, trying to look at all those unknowns. I know we're looking at things like old building foundations from some previous structures that were buried out there. So I think there might be some things we can get them started on as far as a little bit of demolition.
Any other questions, comments on engineering reports?
Yes, one more.
I'm sorry.
Long-winded today. So one of the big items we've been dealing with in the last week is Bentonville has to make an emergency repair on their 48-inch transmission main. This will require them to shut down the main that supplies all of Bentonville and Cave Springs and part of Bella Vista. So during this time, the only way that Bentonville can be fed is through Rogers, since the 24 and 30 inch transmission mains that feed Bella Vista, Rogers, used to also feed Bentonville. So we have two metering stations we're going to turn on. So we're going to have a mock shutdown, or trial shutdown tomorrow, which they're going to turn off their transmission main. We're going to turn our valves on to send everything to Bentonville, just to make sure that everything that the system is responding and behaving as we expected, that we don't have a valve closed somewhere or that becomes apart. And then the first week of March, looks like March 4th is when they'll shut their main down to do the repair on that leak on their transmission main. So we had a big meeting with everybody last week and talked about how this, the schedule, make sure we were going to have enough capacity for their demand, operational controls, contingency planning, everything like that. And so we're expecting to be sending them about 25 million gallons a day. I'm sorry, the total flow from Beaver will be about 25 million gallons a day. The most flow we've ever had going through those lines was 28.2 million gallons, and that was just before Bentonville finished construction on their transmission main. And so we hope what we're going to see is not unprecedented, but it's going to be close to the most water we've ever had coming through our system. So I think we've got all of our I's dotted and T's crossed, but we'll learn a little bit more tomorrow when we do the trial.
How many days is that expected to be?
About a week. By the time they get everything repaired and rechlorinated and tested, it's going to take them about a week to be down.
What happened over there on the line?
They have a reinforced concrete line, and they found a leak. I think they said it was about 50, 60,000 gallons a day leak. And so just cracked joints, deteriorating joints between those concrete pipes. They're going back to the ductile iron pipe this time for their repair.
Very good.
So I know that we're their emergency backup, but is there any financial exchange on this, or do they pay us anything for this, or is this just how it works?
No, we have a mutual agreement, and right. if we ever get in trouble and need to shut down one of our lines, they can feed right. us. That being said, we're in a little bit better situation to feed them because our pressure plane is about 19 feet higher, so we are just by the pressure, we can naturally push water to them. It'd take a little bit more coordination, a little bit more pumping for them to be able to feed us, but we do have that mutual aid agreement.
It'll go through
the meter. Mm-hmm. And then it's reversed. I think
right.
So maybe Paige's question.
They're just
whatever. Obviously, we're paying for water. We're selling
right.
water. They're just reimbursing us.
Yes, I'm sorry.
It's zero.
Those are meter connections, so we know how much.
Okay.
We
yeah.
That's
just
building that. Right.
Yes. Yes.
All right. And
I guess I'm glad we have the ability to do that. And again, this thing can go both ways. So it's nice that hopefully everything goes smooth tomorrow. We don't find any issues either in anybody's pipe. It's nice that we're able to do that.
It is. And, another thing we're looking at doing in our water master plan is, looking for opportunities to connect with other utilities like Two-Ton and Springdale and other points of connection with Bentonville, Cave Spring. Just because that each time you have a redundant connection, that's more protection from, some kind of major leak.
That's good.
The only other thing I've got is, we've got, and I'll address this a little bit later in the meeting too, is the development pressure in areas of limited sewer capacity. Now we have some areas in the south side of town and that end up by the airport. We feel like it's time to look at a policy regarding that sewer capacity. So I'll present that in the form of a resolution later in the meeting.
Thanks.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is the pollution control facilities report. See.
Todd's not here.
Nothing there. Fred? Todd's not here. I didn't know if there's anything that you need. I did not see him, but I know there are reports in the packet, so you're now called to duty, sir.
Sorry, be glad to help, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, they're all in there, pretty much standard. And if there's anything you want to call out, or
no,
if you got any questions, we can certainly hold those to.
We'll get to the significant.
Next month.
Yeah, fully staffed and training. That's a good thing. The dryer has been running well, but we have not been able to get more sludge over to Springdale as of yet. We have not started doing that yet. So, but he's all right. He's in a good spot. And as far as I, still less than, again, data continues to indicate that groundwater infiltration is the chief culprit, but we're less than we were before in our prior year, so we'll take that. And then they've, again, been working, like Brian said, on all of the other items, all of the design for the new solids handling facility. And we will, I guess this is a good time to end. We do have our first open house for odor complaints on February 29th. We'll have another one on March the 7th. For what it's worth, we've had a total of 13 complaints since January of 2022. I'd say on record that correlates highly with some of the new subdivision development in that area. We did not even used to have a log because we didn't need a log. But we'll be inviting them out for an open house. You can see the facility, get a size of the scale and the scope of that facility, ask questions. We're also going to introduce them to this solids handling project, which could be a big part of the odor that they're smelling. You know, a lot of them call it burnt Cheerios, and that would be the sludge dryer operating at high temperature, whereas this new one, as I think I've stated before, is more of a dehydrator, if you will. It's a lot lower temp unit. So that could, and it's our hope, I'm not making promises, but we hope that will get rid of some of that smell. But we'll be having them out there on February 29th and March 7th. You're welcome to come if you're in the area. I hope we get a turnout. The people we contacted were very happy to hear from us and very pleasant to deal with, I have to admit. Excited. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, commission members, that concludes reports. We'll move now into our new business section. The first item of new business is Resolution 2404. It's the preparation of a sewer capacity policy, and that Brian will cover that. Thank you.
Okay, so this is a resolution that basically directing staff to develop a policy concerning sewer capacity and proposed new development. We feel that this policy is needed. We have areas where our hydraulic model has shown that we have surcharging, and we've verified to some extent that these areas do surcharge by the installation of flow monitors. And then the state of Arkansas, the Arkansas Department of Health, considers any type of surcharge and up to a 5-year storm event as overcapacity and will not allow new development. So even if we did approve some of these developments for construction, the Arkansas Department of Health would not approve it. And knowing that they would not approve it, you know, we're not going to take that stance. And so I think it's important to put together a policy so we can explain this, that we explaining our stance, and also couple that with a map showing these areas where we have limited capacity for proposed development, and then updating that map as we make improvements to our system and develop that capacity. I'd be happy to answer any questions. We've already started on a draft version of this policy, and I think one of the things that we want to address is, you know, what is the definition of development, and what type of developments are we going to limit? Because you've got everything from a family building a home on a platted lot to an 80-acre townhome development. And so I think one of the things we've really got to sit down with city planning and define is, you know, what types of developments are we going to limit? I really don't want to get into, you know, limiting things like commercial remodels and some of these smaller things that really aren't going to make much of a difference to our sewer line, even like, you know, property line adjustments, lot splits, and just individual residential construction. I don't know that we necessarily want to get into limiting that type of development, but it's the large multifamily townhome, larger subdivisions that really have an impact to our system that we want to look at restricting. So, Brian, even if like for an individual house, new construction that's in an area, and there is already showing a surcharge in dry conditions, does that mean single residence house would not be allowed, or is that, that's kind of what you're working on, trying to figure out the policy for?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's kind of where, that's where we've got to find that, you know, I want to limit that policy where there's not that gray area.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if I can't develop 50 lots, can I develop 5? Can I build a single house? You know, somewhere in there is, and if I'm a builder and I'm in, you know, if I'm looking to get a building permit and I've got a, you know, I've got a subdivision that's already been platted, city's approved the final plat, I bought a lot to build a home, you know, am I going to be allowed to build that home? And I think that's some of the things we've got to address.
How are those handled now? I mean, are there issues or problems that you see now, and how are those handled? Because you don't have a policy.
Right. So right now, when we have a pre-design meeting or somebody visits with us about, okay, how are we going to connect utilities, we recognize that, you know, this area, and my staff is aware of the issues.
We know the problems.
And so we advise them that, hey, you know, either you're going to need a sewer study because you're increasing the density or you're going to have high flows, or this is in an area where we know we have issues. You're not going to be able to, you know, put this apartment complex in until we make improvements downstream. And so, you know, and some developers do a little bit more pre-planning and than others. And so we try not to catch people off guard. And, you know, they went out and already purchased this 40 acres for several million dollars, and now they're paying interest on it. Now we tell them, well, it's going to be 3 more years until we have these serious projects done before you can develop. And so, you know, we feel it's important to put that in policy where we can, you know, publish that, make that available to planning, so everybody is clear that, hey, this area is going to be limited.
It's a good move.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think working community development, I can't think of a more important thing to do, because, you know, they're looking at, you know, no one's in a silo. The projects that community development, they look at it, then you're taking the planning commission. But many of these, you know, that's as they look at and rewrite Chapter 14. You know, the development, it's important that we have the water and the sewer has to be a part of that. They're wanting, you know, as you want density, you in certain areas, you've got to have the ability to get that water into the sewer. So having a policy, whether it's the policy they're involved in the writing that policy, it just makes sense that the city and the water, it all has to go together. So I think that'd be good work. But yes, community development, John, that group needs to be involved. So
I make a motion that we pass resolution number 24-04, resolution directing preparation of a policy statement concerning sewer capacity for proposed new development and for other purposes.
Motion.
I'll second.
Second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to pass resolution 24-04. Okay, the next item on our agenda is resolution number 24-05, updating performance and payment bond specifications. Brian?
Thank you. So this resolution basically revises the Appendix D of the standard specifications, which describes our bonds, our bond requirements to align with Arkansas state statute, and the text that'll be added is that the bond shall be filed with the county and shall remain until the expiration of the statute of limitations. Or longer. This is one of the things that we've kind of struggled with. And we've got those bond requirements in there, but don't really have a really specific outline into how long we hold those bonds or how those bonds are released. I've also got a attached. Let me scroll down here. to the resolution. So there's the resolution, and then I've also got an example of a contractor's final payment affidavit, and so we would have them submit a final payment affidavit, and then keep that bond on record.
So
at the circuit clerk.
Brian, so for the purposes of what you're asking for us, if you could go back, scroll back down. So this, the contractor's final payment affidavit, that you, this is what you're proposing, and that becomes section 4 in Appendix D. Is that
so
correct?
So this is an example of the form that we would. That we would use. So at the end of the project, they would submit this affidavit stating that all parties have been paid. We would attach this to Appendix D as an exhibit. So as long as we get some form saying, you know, this is the project and these parties have been paid.
And I think you've answered the question, but for the purposes that we're going to entertain and potentially pass this resolution, this item then becomes what you have proposed. That becomes a part of the resolution as presented, and it then becomes in Appendix D. You've got a Section 3. This becomes Section 4. Is that
right? So
that actual. Form up there is actually not going to be part of the resolution. If the resolution section 2 allows the utility engineer to draft a payment affidavit in a form that's useful for him, and it also section 2 also lets him revise it from time to time.
Okay.
Without further action of the commission.
And that answers the question. I didn't know if this was specifically the one that was going to be approved. We're just going to approve the resolution. And the form, he has the discretion to do the Section 4 form.
That is correct.
Okay. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Part of that is going to be bonds are going to be recorded,
correct,
with the county. And does anybody else do that right now? Robert?
I'm not aware of the utilities requiring those bonds to be...
But that's a part of state.
That is part of state statute. That anytime you require a payment performance bonds, that they be filed in.
Yeah. The statute requires that the payment bond be filed. County clerk. The public policy purpose is that if somebody didn't get paid, they can look at the county clerk. It's at the circuit clerk's office actually, and go after that bond. And the way I understand this is working is. Brian needs some good way to make sure that everybody gets paid before he closes out the project on the books. But that payment bond needs to stay on file past that point. So that's the way I understand payment bonds working under that statute. That's going to stay on file, and it's going to be good until the statute of limitations is
but the bad. Bond would not be good, correct?
Past the statute of limitations, nobody can sue them.
Well, isn't your payment bond through whatever date that's on the bond? So, I mean, it wouldn't extend beyond a date on a payment
bond. No, filing wouldn't have any effect on what the bond says. But as far as, I don't know, it's probably going to unfile a bond anyway once it's filed with the circuit clerk. So I think it's going to stay there in the public records.
So just saying that there was a bond on it, not that it would be an enforceable payment bond at a certain point.
Well, yeah, I think it would expire at some point.
Yeah.
Or the statute of limitations would run through with it 6 months or from the final payment on the contract.
Brian, aren't most of them yearly?
I'm sorry?
Aren't most payment bonds yearly?
I believe so. We close out, we allow those bonds to be closed out once we received an assurance from the contractor that everybody's been paid, and we close out the projects. So we close out the payment performance bond, and then they issue a maintenance bond, and then at that point we've got a year. But the way the way our specs are written, this would apply to any project with water and sewer utilities extensions valued at $50,000 or more. That's whether or not it's one of our own projects or a developer's projects that's making improvement to public water and sewer extension.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions, comments? Entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Motion to approve, and I have a second. Travis, Kathy. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to approve resolution 24-05. The next two items are talked, so you're going to pitch it. Okay, so the next item on our agenda is resolution 24-06, purchase of failure gearboxes. Mr. Dobler will present these two.
Yeah, I think you're aware of the situation that we're in here again, some OEM equipment that can be replaced only with the same manufacturer. In this case, it's two gearboxes. One's a Flender and one's a Nord helical. I believe the Flender is on train two and the Nord is on train four. They are different units. So, he's gone out looking around and this is what he's found. Robertson Electrical Mechanical Sales and Service of Van Buren can provide both of them in the amount of $156,535.73 plus taxes, shipping, and any related charges if they need to. And staff would recommend that we pass, or that the commission pass resolution number 2406 in that amount.
I'll make a motion that we pass resolution number 24-06, a resolution approving the purchase of certain gearboxes for use at the Rogers Pollution Control Facility, authorizing expenditure of funds for the purchase, waiving competitive bidding, and for other purposes.
Is there a motion?
Second.
Motion second. Any discussion, comments?
I was just going to make the comment. I assume that that's a reasonable amount. You can say $20 or $153,000, and I'm not going to know the difference on the gearbox. But is this a replacement or... Or just a spare?
One, we tried to get repaired, and it was...
Too far gone?
It was too far gone. I saw pictures of it, and it was too far gone. So we had to get a new one there. And then the other one's a replacement in case we have a redundancy. We need one, and they take so long to get here. So.
Very good.
Okay, we have a motion by Kathy, a second by Paige. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to pass resolution 24-06. Next item would be resolution 24-07, contract for biosolids purchase and removal. Mr. Dobler?
Yes, this is for, if you recall, we had three haulers at one time. Mm-hmm. And this is always kind of an up and down thing. Sometimes they want it, sometimes they don't. I think a lot of this, I'm not sure what the drivers are, the price of fertilizer, other soil amendments, not real sure. But we were down to one. And so Todd went back out. This new person is Horse Creek Cattle, and they've submitted a purchase for that too. They would like it. And under the rotational system for purchases that he uses out there, Bordertown Farms will be first in the rotation, then followed by Horse Creek Cattle. This is simply to add Horse Creek Cattle as an additional firm on that biosolids hauling contract.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 2407.
Second.
A motion second. Any further discussion? All in favor of approving resolution 24-07, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, let's see. Next resolution next item is resolution 24-08, CCTV request policy.
Travis was going to present this, and he is out today, out sick. So this is a resolution basically just approving a remobilization fee of $150 for CCTV services for developments. This is part of the inspection process where our field crews go out with the camera van and CCTV. The sewer lines, a lot of times they're not clean like they're required to be, so our crews basically waste time mobilizing, taking the van out there in a two-man crew. So the $150 is basically it's a CCTV is a free service we provide, but we don't want to have to go out there twice. And so this help motivate those guys to get their lines nice and clean and ready for inspection by the time we're there.
Okay.
I like it. I'll make a motion. Resolution number 2408.
Second.
Motion second. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries to pass resolution 24-08. Next item is, thank you, Brian. The next item on the agenda is a report of the Depository Board. Jerry?
Thank you. We did just have a meeting of the Depository and Investment Committee. Gave them our annual report. I'm going to give the highlights to this commission as well. The numbers you see on the screen here are funds as of December 31st, 2023. We've got columns for water, sewer, and combined. You can see the separations there for interest-bearing checking accounts. CD investments, funds we've got in our Simmons Trust accounts for access and impact fees, and accounts for debt service as well. I'll just kind of point out in general, at a high level, we've got $8 million in our interest-bearing checking accounts, accounting for about 16% of these funds, and almost $39 million invested in CDs at the end of the year. This slide shows you our restricted and unrestricted funds by water and sewer. And again, this at the bottom totals up to that $50 million. And I'll just point out kind of the highlight here is the investments in CDs. On the water side, we've got about 12 and a half that are unrestricted funds, about 1.1 invested in funds and restricted for meter deposits, and 2.5 million restricted for depreciation. A total of $16.2 million invested in CDs on the water side. On the sewer side, it's $22.7 million invested in CDs, and all of that is unrestricted funds. Our performance for the year in terms of our interest income is a pretty stark increase, pretty dramatic increase from prior year. I can increase this just a little bit. Interest-bearing checking accounts, we've got accounts both at Arvest and First National Bank. In total, our interest income for calendar year 2023 was about $185,000, with rates at the end of the year between 1 and 2.85%. Trust accounts for access and impact fees at Simmons yielded $63,000. Our bonds accounts between water and sewer generated $58,000 of interest income. And the big one here is our investments in CDs, between water and sewer generating $1.4 million of interest income. For context, we have these notes at the bottom. Calendar year 2022, we reported $337,000 of interest income. The year before that, it was $130,000 of interest income. And then for our audited financials, the fiscal year ending June 30, 2022, we had $119,000. And then just this prior fiscal year, June 30, 2023, we reported just under $900,000. So you can see in June, we were trending up, right? And now here with a full year of good interest rates behind us, calendar year 2023, we're at $1.7 million. So that's pretty dramatic. You can see I've given you the average interest rates here. For water and sewer, they're right around 5%, the CDs that we've got invested in those funds. And for comparison, you can see that for calendar year 2022, that average interest rate was under 2%, and the year before that, just a quarter of a percent. So it's a good time to be investing in CDs, which is what we've done. They're safe investments. They're laddered on one-year terms throughout the year, so they give us access to liquidity if and when we need it. So we feel pretty good about how those investments are sitting there in those CDs. The other thing that we talked about, I'll scroll back here and put that so you can see it, was our minimum reserves. And this is an exhibit to our RWU investment policy. So each year, this minimum reserves amount gets updated. And I may be looking at the wrong one here. There we go. So on the right side of this page, you see our prior year minimum reserves for water and sewer. We've just updated the numbers per the formula given to us in the investment policy. It's the on that left side now, the prior year operating expenses. So we're looking at FY23 expenses for the water fund plus our upcoming debt service. That gives us the minimum reserve for FY25. We back out the prior year depreciation for our minimum short-term reserves, and it's the same formula on the sewer side as well. So just to read those out loud, for water, we're talking about minimum reserves of $14,459,000, minimum short-term reserves of $11,268,000. On the sewer side, we're looking at minimum reserves of $14,856,000 and minimum short-term reserves of $9,400,000. $20,000. We have a recommendation to approve this modification to the RWU investment policy relating to proposed minimum reserves, and it's my understanding that we need to entertain a motion here for the commission to also approve this modification.
Am I able to make a motion, Robert?
Okay. Let me ask for some clarification, because I was kind of getting to actually what we needed to do officially, because it shows as a report, but there's also official action you want us to take. Would you, one more time, Gerald, I was trying to figure out, again, it's a report, but do we as a commission need to accept the board, the advisory board's recommendation? What do we need to do, Ms. Fraser?
Chairman, I think it would be appropriate, with our policy, for the commission as a whole to receive the report, the depository board and investment committee, and to approve the modification to the investment policy, which would essentially be taking a motion, second, and a vote to approve Exhibit A, the setting of the minimum reserves as proposed by the board. And to answer Mr. Green's question, it's perfectly fine for Mr. Green to make a motion to you.
I would like to understand that motion. Obviously, we have the modification. It's also accepted in the reports, but then also the modification. I'm sure you're on that committee.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you would mind making a motion to accept the depository board report.
I will make a motion to accept the recommendation of the depository board and the changes in policy A.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any questions, comments? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Ms. Frazier, does that cover what we need to make sure that we covered? I know they didn't have the word modification in there, but have we covered?
I believe the action of the commission is just taken sufficient.
Thanks, sir. Okay, thank you. Jared, thank you very much. And, okay, the last thing we have on the agenda is a change order for the 2020 pipe bursting.
Just for reference, I'll go back to the walnut widening. It was actually 27.5% is what RDOT is covering.
Not the 18.
I'm going to go ahead and make a prediction that the bid is going to come in so high that it's not going to be an issue anyway. It's going to get rejected.
The issue before had that 24/7, four lanes on
there. It's going to be $800 trillion. There's no way this is going to happen.
Yeah, RDOT's estimate was
$3.4 million for the water and sewer. So we'll see how it comes in. But
in the meantime,
this is a change order. So the field operations have identified another set of sewer that was not in the original bid here to be pipe burst. And since we have a pipe bursting contractor and we got a pretty good price on it, we would like to change order and get this added in. We only had $25,000 of owner's allowance in there. And as you can see, we're going over that a little bit to get all this in here, but there is 665 feet of six going to eight with 13 connections. And so that change order amount is the $118,925, bringing the new total to the $768,650.
Is that price figured on existing unit prices?
Yes, sir. That is using it's functionally just overruns on
existing. Very good.
Okay, we have a
history on that. The reason we had a sewer stoppage there this weekend before, it's going to cost us about $8,000. Luckily, the homeowner in his home threw a bunch of towels down and comforters and everything, kept it from running all over the house, kept it contained in the bathrooms, in the tubs and stuff. So, that's why we recommend that. And worst part about it is we got 8-inch plastic and then the 665 feet of 6-inch clay, and then we go back to 8-inch plastic. So
I like to mix things up. The hybrid.
So, that's why we felt that they needed to be.
So we have a staff recommendation for a change order on this pipe bursting in the amount of $118,925, bringing the new total price $768,650. And with that, I would entertain a motion on the change order.
I'll make a motion that we do the change order amount of $118,925, making the new total price of $768,650.
Second.
First and second. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? With that, that concludes the agenda items that we have before us. Mr. Dobler, is there anything else to come before the commission? With that, the commission stands adjourned. Thank you.